ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
And good day, good night. Welcome to Soccer Today for July 25th, 2018. As always, I'm Kevin Larame. Joining me on the line, as always, as well, Dwayne Mullins. Dwayne, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. Are you getting All-Star Game fever yet?
No. That's what happens when you go. It's always fun. Last year, I went to Chicago for the All-Star Game. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to chance to see Ronaldo. No, Ronaldo, no. He did not come last year to Chicago. And guess what? He is not coming to Georgia, to Atlanta, this year as well. Juventus and the All-Star team next week. We're going to talk about it a little bit, but not that much, and not today. And there's one little bit of news that have caught our attention. And if you listened to yesterday's show, we're mentioning it's not done yet. It's probably going to be done soon. It is done now. Alphonso Davies transferred for $13 million plus bonuses and add-ons that could potentially go up to $20 million. So far, the biggest transfer in MLS history. Transfer out, I mean. And Alphonso Davies is staying with Vancouver. I don't know if we're going to see him play a lot, but Alphonso Davies will move to Bayern Munich as soon as the January transfer window opens.
That's my general comment about that. I'm happy to see this happen. And there's a lot of people out there that I think are being negative nillies about this thing because they think he might not play there. And that's true. He might. He might have to really struggle and fight for playing time at a couple of club like Bayern Munich because it's Bayern Munich. But I do think that on the whole, you've got to be excited by this. He has said, I guess, that he doesn't want to go out and loan. Now, this strikes me as the bravado of a 17-year-old more than anything real. If Bayern Munich sits this kid down and goes, look, this is what, if you want to play for us, this is what we need you to do, he's going to do it. So this idea that he's, you know, oh, he can only sit in the bench at Bayern, no. If they feel the best state for his development is to go to St. Pauli for a while, then he's going to go there, right? So, you know, and then they can sing that they love him. We love him, they love him, and all they do is follow, right? So it'll be good.
And, you know, one thing we cannot dismiss, and this is based off one of your tweets yesterday. By the way, you can follow us on social media, Dwayne at 24th Minute, and myself at Kev Larame, the show at Soccer Today, SPN. Dwayne, you were mentioning, let's not forget one thing. Maybe he's good enough to just play for Munich. Who knows?
Yeah, well, he might be. Yeah, that's the thing I said yesterday on Twitter. Is, I mean, we're doing all these, you know, we're evaluating, oh, maybe he'll go to Portugal. And there's a lot of people that want him to go to Portugal. That's a great place for young players to play. A lot of people say the B2. B2 has been a good league and a kind lead the Canadians for a long time. Rob Friend had a great career in the B2, but I think we all want Alphonso Davies to excel a little higher than Rob Friend did, although Rob Friend did well for himself. You know, we all talk about that. We say, oh, maybe another year in MLS, maybe this, maybe that. Maybe he plays at Bayern Munich. And I think that that is what we all should be dreaming for right now. Look, I don't see why it's so insane that he might not be able to. Bayern Munich isn't stupid. They're not signing this kid as a charity, as I said the other day. They think he has talent, and if they think he's ready, he will play. If they think he needs to go somewhere else, he will. That's what's going to happen, and we just need to watch this play out. I think it's really fortunate that he's going to get the rest of the year in Vancouver, which was really never in doubt because
he can't,
in case you don't...
He can't go, I was going to say he can't go anywhere until he's 18. Like the ITC, which is the International Transfer Certificate, can only be handed out to 18-year-olds and over. So as much as people are like, why is he staying? Why is he loan back? It's not because of a want. It's just a necessity. He's not allowed to leave right now.
Yeah, the only way that a player that's a minor can leave for another country, have their ITC transferred, is if their family is determined to have legitimately moved to that country for legitimate reasons. And FIFA does not consider following your kid around a legitimate reason. You know, dad or mom has to be offered a job or something like that, right? And then, you know, obviously, I think they would have seen through this had suddenly the Davises had and a desire to relocate to Munich, that probably wouldn't have been accepted. So give it 4 months, right? well, yeah. what, it's five or 6 months, I guess, but I can't do my math in my head right now. It's almost August, which is it's four or five months. Yeah. It's not that long.
It's not that long. You know, and
when you're 17, it probably seems like a long time, but it's not.
Yeah. Exactly. A lot of things can happen. And a lot of people are like, well, what if he gets injured? Well, if he gets injured, he's going to rehabilitate, and he's going to rehabilitate in Germany. That's not an issue. But one thing that's an issue, and it's one thing that we've talked about this before, and there's a big dichotomy between Canada and the United States on this issue, and that's the solidarity fees. Edmonton Strikers were the academy club long time ago that Alphonso Davies were going up through, and Steven Sandor, friend of the show, has written a nice article. Why don't you give us a bit more details on the article, Dwayne, and the solidarity payment issue that could maybe see the Edmonton Strikers and FC Edmonton get a piece, a small piece for that matter, but a piece of those maybe between 30 to 20 million.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking thousands of dollars, not hundreds of thousands of dollars when you're talking about a solidarity payment, but it can make a lot of difference in the bottom line of a youth club, as anyone who's involved in a youth club would know. It's not enough when it comes to Canadian teams. It's on record multiple times now that there have been solidarity pays played to Canadian teams for transfers out of MLS. The most prominent was the Daniel Henry transfer to West Ham. We have it on record. There is a YouTube video out there of the manager of North Mississauga, the Panthers, I believe they're called, the North Mississauga Panthers, saying that they received the solidarity payment and they were going to use it to do this. And actually, the North Miss program is a really successful program on both the men's and the women's sides, and they've used the money very well because they do still to this day produce a lot of players, particularly on the women's side. They're a very, very, very good women's program. At any rate, this is a valuable sort of process for youth clubs to take this money and reinvest it back into youth development. It's key to around the world. Now, in the United States, these payments aren't made, and there is a court case, a challenge against this that is still ongoing. One of the primary people that is opposed to this are the Players Association, because they feel that it might be a detriment to a club buying a player, and so therefore restrict their movement. Now, I am very much a supporter of MLSPU. I am pro-labor in all the ways that you possibly can be. I am absolutely on the player's side when it comes to the disputes with the ownership of MLS. I want them to push that envelope every bit. If they have to strike eventually, I will support them in that endeavor to a point. I'll have to look at it at the time. But when it comes to this issue, they're wrong. They're just dead wrong. If you're good enough, a team is not going to let $10,000 or $20,000 solidarity payment impact their decision to purchase you when you're spending millions of dollars, right? So it's silly to suggest otherwise.
Especially in the Alphonso Davies situation, where 10, 20,000, more or less than that, who knows? It's just hypothesis and just figures to illustrate our point. But out of 13 million, yeah, it's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, and look, one of the problems with labor in general is that, I come from a labor household, okay? Like, my family was blue collar. We were in labor. We were in unions. Like, I'm pro-union in every way. But what happens generally is that when you're collective bargaining, you'll sacrifice the future to take care of the now. That's human instinct to do. It means that you're going to have your entry salaries go lower so that your current salaries stay higher, or that your seniority hiring and firing takes place. Obviously, the union's going to take care of the people that have been there longer. That's just a fact of life, right, in the general world sense. When it comes to this issue, this is what's happening. They're refusing to negotiate this, or using it as a play in some way to sort of help their current players. And again, I think the MLSPU does a lot of great work, but I just disagree with them at this point. Anyway, to get back to Canada, Kevin, though, beyond the Strikers, there is another program out there that could really benefit a great deal, and this is this free program that Alphonso Davies started in. It's called Free Footy, and Free Footy is a program that's free for kids that can't afford to get into a more standardized program, and it really, the Davies camp really gives a lot of credit to this. If they get some money in this, and it's not clear whether they would, but if they do get some money in this, that could be massive for a program like that, that would allow them to expand throughout Alberta, and perhaps even into other provinces, and provide this valuable service to a whole bunch of disadvantaged kids all over the country. And as Stephen wrote in his article that was published last night, and you can read it on the 11.ca, there is an Alphonso Davies in every city. That's what he said in the article. Now, that may seem extreme, but if you mine the system and you have the resources to do that and you provide them the right sort of shaping, absolutely, there could be. There could be at least an Alphonso Davies in every other city. And if you find four or five more of them, then suddenly this country isn't looking at the inside or looking from the outside in at the hacks. They're at least that far along. And I think that this is just such an important issue.
The famous pay-to-play versus not pay-to-play, it's a debate that's been going on in the long-term development circles for a long time. And if you look at the higher-ups, especially in the U.S. side, majority of players, and I say majority, so some players, majority of players, somewhere in between, that actually graduate and able to pay for those AAA clinics at night, night and evening, on the summer, exposed to different scouts and those combines, those private combines or those private things, those are all pretty expensive. And to finally get your breakthrough, to finally get discovered, we're talking about thousands of dollars, if not tens of thousands of dollars, for a lot. And the Alphonso Davies situation, especially here in Canada, shows us that pay to play might not be the way. And if you find a situation where you can actually help players without paying necessarily for them to combine, but create an environment, create a part of that pyramid that does not discriminate the amount of money you have versus the talent you have, it could change the game.
Look, when you talk about pay to play, it has a very nasty reputation within the world of soccer, right? So that's something that's obviously, it's obvious to people. But really what we're talking about, and I want to make this clear, is that pay-to-play at the elite level is just detrimental to the development of the system. You do need to have, and I recognize this, that there has to be a pay element to certain aspects of your youth program. No one is suggesting that your house league needs to always be free. You can charge certain fees at that point, so long as you're reinvesting back up the pyramid and allowing that your more extreme, more elite streams are not, you know, from the age of 12 on up, paying a lot of money to play this game. So that's I want to make that clear, because I don't think that anyone is suggesting that soccer just should be free, that we should be playing in some kind of socialist utopia here. We get that, you know, bills have to be paid and salaries have to be paid, but you do need to make sure that you didn't. Profit should not be your prime focus when you're running a youth club. It should be a break-even proposition for the most part.
And that's where I've always had problems with the Barcelona Escola, PSG academies here and over there. Their goal is to make money, not to produce players, and especially not to produce Canadian players. And I'm just saying, two examples, there's thousands of those examples coast to coast. And for me, that's where a bit of the problem lays. It's not about being free. It's about if you're an elite player, not having money should not be an obstacle to playing. And for me, that's where there's a big difference. If you're good enough, you should find a way to play. Doesn't matter if you have the money or not. And it could be a case-by-case situation, fine. But it should not be an obstacle. You should not have your career halted because you don't have the money to subscribe or to enroll into a specific program. If you're good enough, if you're proven, if you prove yourself, if you qualify, if you make the team, money should not be the issue.
No, for sure. And look, to be clear, there are a lot of great programs, particularly in the province I'm in, that are completely merit-driven right now and aren't costing these players a lot of money. And I think it's no mistake that this isn't like, oh, Toronto is the best, Ontario is the best kind of argument I'm saying here. When you look at the model that through the hard work of people like Dino Rossi has created over the past few years to create free elite programs that cater to the 16, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old elite player that they're playing in, you know, amongst elite competition week in, week out in League One Ontario model and the PLSQ model in Quebec, which is a little bit different. But nonetheless, that those kind of leagues don't exist in a paid
PLSQ, I have to say, it's a lot different and it's still behind. Ontario, at least at the elite level from the age of 13 to maybe U23, is miles ahead of every other province in Canada.
Yeah, part of that's population and just scale, right? But also they're doing a lot of good things. There's a lot of free programs, a lot of free elite programs in Ontario right now that are producing or finding players like, you know, Alphonso Davies happens to come from the West in this particular case, but there's a lot more in terms of the overall you know, they're sitting there. Like the next Jonathan Rosario won't have to go to Uruguay to develop. They can do it right there in their backyard. And I think that that's, you know, as much as we're going to probably talk about York 9 on Two Solitudes this week, and they're kind of struggling off the pitch, but I think on the pitch, York 9 has a good chance to launch for success because of the wealth of talent in this region, and they will be drawing directly from it for a lot of their domestic players. So that's a bit of a Two Solitudes preview there, but it has to do with a lot of hard and great work that's being done at the SAC level, at LeBron Ontario, all of these programs that are out there, that are, and CC Academy deserves credit as well. There's a lot of rich talent here that's being developed the proper way. So it's not, I think in many ways, Canada's a little ahead of the curve when it comes to this as compared to the United States, where the for-profit model kind of rules the day in a lot of places. And that has a lot to do, I think, probably just with the philosophical differences between the two countries, too. So a lot of that's cultural.
Yeah, and we hate to do this, but we always do, comparing to other sports, because, well, in our neck of the woods, there's multiple different type of sports and way players go through. When you look at American football, when you look at basketball, when you look even at the hockey level, the pay-to-play at the elite level, especially when you go to college and those things, are taken out of the equation with scholarships and whatever. And when we talked to Travis Clark on yesterday's show, it's funny, it actually bleeds into today, but there's not full scholarships usually for soccer players. We've seen soccer programs in the United States being shut down. University of New Mexico is shutting down their soccer program, and that's a shame. And there's that difference where it all fine good, and we understand in other sports, it's fine, yeah. We were giving players and kids and teenagers opportunity that they wouldn't have because of their social status. We give them to them, and it's returned tenfold with then growing to the professional level and making a great career. But in soccer, it's like we don't agree with that model for some reason. I don't know why. There's many different reasons, but we should understand that I'd rather have 10 players given an opportunity, 10 players not panning out for one opportunity actually working, and some people say it's lost money, it's lost investments, than the other way around, and having one guy slip through the crack and not make it. I think we're at that point now. We actually need to understand that opportunities will make a difference down the road for men's national team, both U.S. men's national team and Canadian men's national team. And the differences there, if you just look at what Mexico is doing and look at other places, kids, players in a young age that are coming from not the best social status, if you want to put it that way, not necessarily the most richest family, the Chicharitos, the Guardado, they find ways to play and to have backers and to have the federation having that program to make them progress and give them a little boost of confidence by believing in them, investing money in them, and be, look, you don't owe us anything. Here's some money, train, do what you think is best. Yes, there's some supervision, but what I mean is there needs to be opportunities. And for me, that's a big difference. And if you look at the Alphonso Davies story, to get back to that, it's exactly what it is. He had an opportunity. He was discovered and continued from then.
No, precisely. I've often said when it relates to Canada that if you could harness just the talent in the city of Toronto effectively, or Vancouver for that matter, just that one city should be enough to get us into the hex, right? But we don't. So we struggle. To turn it to the United States for a second, if you harness the talent in a city like New York City or L.A., forget making a World Cup. Obviously, they do that already. Well, except for this past time.
But majority of times. On, so yeah. We'll, most times they make it.
Most times. But forget that. They could go, that's a semifinals team if you just harness that talent properly. But we don't in this country, and that's always been the problem. And that's why everyone looked at North America for a long time and said, just if they ever just turned their attention to the sport fully, then they would be dangerous. I think, I've always said that I think the U.S. could win a World Cup in my lifetime if they harness their talent. You know, my lifetime's getting shorter now. So
you're not that old.
A few years.
Come on.
I have still a few years left, but you know, that's, you know, getting over. I still think it's possible. Obviously, if they harness the talent correctly, and that's why I think when the U.S. people are freaking out about missing this time, they're kind of, you don't want to blow it up too much. There are some good things down there, but you do need to better give more opportunities to particularly those disadvantaged populations. And when I say that, that's, you know, meant just exactly that way, people that don't have the money, but it often can mean people that come from cultures originally, like their parents were born into cultures and they have moved to the United States as, you know, new Americans, as immigrants from places where the game is king. And those communities, I think most Americans agree, are often underrepresented and underserviced. And this solidarity fee issue is massive to try and tap into that. So I think that in many ways, and I've said this before, I think it's the most important issue right now facing the American system is to figure this out so that the youth systems can be funded properly. And this is such a mechanism, such a great mechanism for doing that,
yeah,
that they can fully do what they should be able to do and fully reach into communities like the Latin communities that maybe aren't engaged right now for both financial and for cultural reasons. They can do better work that way. And a solidarity fee payment structure consistently paid out is one really solid way that they can start to do that. So this is, to me, if not the most important issue facing U.S. soccer right now. It's right up there. It's on the first page of Google. If you Google what's wrong with U.S. soccer, solidarity payments should come up on that first page.
One thing that it's not to dismiss as well in this issue before we take a small break and come back and talk about the Canadian Championship is, look, if you're an academy and at a certain level, you got your great players, you develop him, you know he's got a future, you're always wary of losing that talent, of not getting rewarded. So you're trying to keep him, you're trying to, not to halt their progress, but you want to keep him as long as possible. A solidarity fee will maybe make the communication better between academies and different pyramids across the United States to be able to streamline the discovery of talents. And if you know that you give a call to whatever DC United, I'm just going to use them because they're in the news example, you're from a Virginia something Academy Soccer and you got a great player and you know he's got, you know that your pawn is getting short real quick and you need to move in to continue his development. If you know you're going to have a solidarity payment down the road that can actually help the entire organization, you're going to want to make that phone call maybe earlier than later. And that timing, that streamlining of talent, could be helped with the establishment and the respect of solidarity fees rules that actually exist in FIFA across the entire world except the United States.
Precisely. And they are. American exceptionalism is a universal thing. And in particular, in this case, is not particularly good for them. Look, yes, I think that having solidarity payments consistently paid out will help to shift another cultural problem with North American soccer, in particular American soccer, and that is this belief among some that the chase of shiny trophies is more important than developing players. You know, you have plastic trophies on your shelf, that means you're successful, as opposed to I've made two players professional in the last 10 years. Well, if there's a financial reward, right now there is a financial reward for winning those plastic trophies because the families of people pay money to play in systems where they can win those shiny trophies for themselves and they can sit at a bar 10 years down the line and talk about how they were the Maryland state champions in 19 whatever or 2000 whatever, right? That's how that benefits them. If you have a really big, much bigger financial benefit for the clubs themselves and for the players themselves to make it, then yeah, I think that's a cultural shift that needs to happen.
Here's an example, Dwayne. What is Newell's Old Boys in Argentina known for? Winning trophies or developing Messi?
Well, they do both, but it's the latter for sure.
When you say the name, one thing comes to mind. Oh, yeah, that's the club Messi came from before he entered Europe. Exactly. So there's something to that, I think.
You see that passport when he looks like he's 10 years old. Yeah.
Terrible haircut. Such a terrible haircut.
Yeah. He's 4'2".
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no.
All right. Let's take a very short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a bit the Canadian review that continues tonight.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
You like our show? Please subscribe anywhere you get your podcast or feeds.feedburner/soccertodaySPN Radio. Make sure you Follow us as well on Patreon, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Every dollar is appreciated, and if you go to the threshold of $2 and more a month, you get access to the exclusive Canadian soccer show called the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, where we'll discuss more in depth the Canadian Championship that continues tonight, Dwayne. And tonight, two games, two MLS teams has a 1-0 lead heading into the second round. Montreal travels to Vancouver from Portland, so at least the travel wasn't too bad, and they got a 1-0 lead. Ottawa travels to Toronto. Toronto, with a goal from captain Jonathan Osorio last week, are winning 1-0 as well.
I think that the biggest question, and obviously I will be at the stadium at Beautiful Field tonight to take in that second leg, looking forward to it, first time back there in a while, because I didn't go to the one game during the World Cup because, well, World Cup. I think the biggest question that I'm going to have is whether we see Jozy Altidore again, and I would suggest that we would, which might not be good news for the Ottawa Fury. So we'll see, because he needs his fitness back, and we saw him on the weekend. Not quite as sharp as maybe we're used to seeing, but absolutely that same physical presence, which makes the rest of the team blossom. And if you're TFC, you have to really question. They did rotate the squad pretty significantly in the first leg in Ottawa and got the 1-0 road win. I'm not sure they can afford to do the same at home, particularly in front of a home crowd that's a little bit frustrated. So I expect Toronto might try and get some more rhythm and try and build upon that momentum of the weekend with a fairly close to full-strength lineup this week. And that's not insignificant, and I think Jozy needs to get out back out there to get a run out. In terms of the Montreal-Vancouver game, Kevin, and I'll ask you, what was the Impact's traveling squad? Do you know how many of their top players have gone?
Oh, they all traveled because they played versus Portland on the weekend. So they had a full contingent of 24 players traveling with the club. Because of injuries and because of the Canadian Championship happening tonight, they actually traveled with all their A team, you could put it that way, plus an extended bench, you could say, to have some options, and especially with injuries that happened in the weekend, and we've seen the Camacho injuries in Portland, and it'll be interesting to see what the lineup is tonight. But having observed Rémi Garde and his coherence versus what he says and what he does, it usually is the same. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Montreal pulls out a similar team to last week's, where you have a Piatti maybe on the bench, but ready to come in if needed, and you have still very quality players like a Saphir Taider and like other great players. Saphir Taider, one of the hottest players right now in Major League Soccer. You do have that sense for me where they need to get a result. Rémi Garde sees games a bit the same way. It doesn't matter if it's a league game, it's a cup game. It's still the team going through a match and trying to learn something from a match and continue a certain momentum. A loss against Vancouver on the road would halt the momentum, at least the perception of momentum, and I think that's important for Montreal to continue to build on that confidence, on that base of confidence, where we see Montreal resurging in the standings in the league. And a result, at least making it to the final of the Canadian Championship, wouldn't mean a lot to the fans, but it would mean a lot as well. It's a first final for this crop of coaches and of players this time around. And I think there is something to that. So the traveling contingent is big. It's good. And there's, of course, players like Mathieu Chouinard, who might have his first start tonight. Who knows? But there is the possibility of having a very strong lineup. The fact that Jackson Amel got a little bit of knock last week on his left calf during the game late and was subbed off, maybe you don't see him, but you might see other top players like a Mancus who could start tonight, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, and look, I think it's a testament to the growth of this tournament that clubs are, you know, playing it the way they are. Yeah, there's rotation that goes in this, but there's rotation in the FA Cup in England. There's rotation in all the Cups, Leagues, competitions everywhere around the world. It's a cup competition. By nature, it's below the league. The league is king. I know people have trouble getting their head around that, but it really is. Not many people, just the hardcore that, in fairness, are most of our listeners. I think it's a testament that they have players and they do stuff. Like, okay, well, let's bring the team and we'll sit them on the bench because we need them, we have them. I think that actually says that this competition is maturing. And it's maturing at a perfect point because I don't think next year, but the year after, it's going to be frustrating for the Canadian Premier League teams next year to not be involved in this, but maybe they will. But I don't know. We haven't heard officially yet, but I think they'll probably sit out that first year because I don't know how you exactly would do that. But anyway, when this gets fully opened up, I think it's perfect. And in many ways, just like MLS versus the Canadian Premier League and how the Canadian Premier League has learned from the mistakes MLS did and is able to, been able to, well, be able to structure a league that sort of takes what worked in MLS, like, you know, some, and make Canadian business soccer. And to the look at the things that haven't worked in MLS, like rules that no one understands, and not having a plan for promotion and relegation, and combine it into the perfect league. I think what the Canadian Premier League, when it launches, is going to be is what MLS should have been in 1996 and would have been in 1996 had they had hindsight. And I think the same thing is going to happen with the Voyageurs Cup, where they've seen the mistakes the U.S. Open Cup has made over the years, and they're able to go, okay, well, you're doing this well, you're doing this not so well, and they're going to create a competition when it fully gets open that's going to be the better version of the U.S. Open Cup. I'm not saying that to be an arrogant Canadian. I think it's because it's really our, you know, it's pathetic that it's taken us this long to do it. We are at fault, we are going to take advantage of that mistake.
It's the only benefit we have from starting a league 23 years later than MLS, is maybe learning from a bit of Major League Soccer's mistakes back in the mid-90s. But it'll be interesting to see the games tonight. We'll, of course, talk about it on the next show and probably on the next two Solitudes as well to make sure that we bring you your Canadian soccer-only show. The only Canadian soccer-focused show out there, national coast-to-coast coverage on the Two Solitudes. And we were asked, Dwayne, on social media a few days ago, what are you going to do next year? There's no team in Toronto, no team in Montreal. Doesn't matter. We have colleagues all across the world, yes, but all across Canada. And on the Two Solitudes, when Canadian Premier League launches, we'll have details of every single market in that league. We'll have interviews, great coverage, as we have been known to do over the last 5 years. And that will continue on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, which you can subscribe to for $2 a month. Patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Every little dollar is appreciated and rewards us for our time. And we thank you very much. Dwayne, as always, you can be followed on Twitter at 24th Minute. Myself at Kev Laramie. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Soccer Today. And until then, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.